I'm Marty Moscoe, and welcome to Radio Times. South Carolina legislators are meeting today, and one of the issues they're likely to take up is what to do about the Confederate flag that flies at the Confederate Soldiers Monument on the grounds of the Capitol. There have been mounting calls for its removal after 9 African Americans were murdered at a Charleston church last month. The alleged shooter, Dylan Roof, posed on the internet with the flag and talked about starting a race war. We asked Skylar Croft, Post and Courier reporter who covers South Carolina politics, to join us on Radio Times to get our conversation started. And Skylar, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Hey, good morning.
Any sense about how the vote will go, and will it be today?
It's breaking up. You've got the House taking up their action and the Senate taking up their action, and they're also dealing with the governor's veto. So I think it's going to be, one will move while the other watches.
And this is obviously a decision that the legislature makes, but how much the fact that the governor called for its removal, how much did that kind of jumpstart this conversation?
That pretty much started the entire thing. That was just fresh right after the attack on the church. So there's been a kind of a cooling off time since then, but I think that you're going to see the leadership of both chambers say, let's get this done.
And how about for South Carolina residents? Is there information or even polling about where they stand on the Confederate battle flag?
Well, that's one avenue that some of the flag supporters are trying to push, is to send the whole idea to a referendum. But I don't think that's going to take off anywhere.
I noticed that State Senator Paul Thurman, the son of Strom Thurmond, has called for its removal, called it a symbol of racism and bigotry. How important was that?
Well, like you said, the imagery of him getting up there and saying that, there was a portrait of his father hangs in the Senate as well. So that was kind of the leadoff voice in the Senate, said, let's take this down. And again, he was represented the same county as Clementa Pinckney, the senator minister who was killed in the attack.
So obviously he knew him.
Absolutely.
And does Paul Thurmond, does he have a lot of sway in the South Carolina legislature?
He's really kind of one of the more junior senators in the body. It's a very much an old white man's club in the Senate as well. So you'll see a lot of the leadership is into their 70s and 80s. And so he's kind of one of the younger voices.
And we're talking about Republicans that control both the House and the Senate in South Carolina. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And for the people that want it removed, what is their argument?
Well, a lot of it is, this is a heritage argument, and it goes back to the, 23,000 South Carolinians who died during the war is what they're pressing. And there were demonstrations going on right now, pro-flag supporters, and over the weekend there was even some robocalls of these kind of groups trying to put pressure on the governor as well as lawmakers in key districts.
And there are demonstrations going on as we speak?
As we speak, yes, there's both sides are up on the Capitol grounds.
Where, let's say the legislature decides to remove the flag, is there a plan on where to move it?
I would imagine what will happen is if you can get the action as quick as Thursday, the governor would sign the bill and there would be groundskeepers that would come down right away and take down the flag and the flagpole, and there's a small fence around it, and it'd be gone very quickly. And the flag that's there is really not any sort of historic artifact. It's a product of the 20th or 21st century that goes up there. But they would probably take the last flag, and the idea is to move it to the Confederate Relic Room, which is just a few blocks down the street.
The Confederate Relic Room. Is that also associated with the state grounds, or is that independent or separate?
That's independent. It's part of the state museum, so it's part of the entire history of South Carolina, as far back as the dinosaur age is on display there.
The dinosaur age? I didn't...
Yeah, old bones and shark's teeth and that sort of thing.
How long has this flag flown on the grounds of the Capitol in South Carolina?
Well, what happened is around 2000, there was a large movement to bring the flag off the Capitol. It flew on top of the dome as well as in the House chamber and the Senate chamber. And so the compromise then was to move the flag out of that area of sovereignty and put it on display on a flagpole next to the Confederate monument there.
And it's, as I said earlier, controlled by the legislature. It needs to, 2/3 vote in order to have it removed?
Right. That was written into the law so that, you know, there's an argument now over whether or not you can lock in future legislators to that two-thirds minimum, but that's what they're going on.
I was reading some of your reporting on this, and some are saying, well, let's replace the Confederate battle flag with another flag. One of the suggested flags is a flag called the Bonnie Blue.
Yeah, that was one of the early kind of flags that before the Confederacy kind of got entrenched on what its emblems would be that flew here in Charleston.
And what does it look like?
It's a kind of a blue flag with a white star in it. It's kind of modeled after the South Carolina flag, which everyone recognizes as the Palmetto Tree and the Crescent Moon.
I was reading there's a KKK rally set for July 18th.
Yeah, that was planned. Everyone has to reserve space if they want to on the statehouse grounds, and that's the date that they picked. But it looks as though if the flag is taken care of by this week, then you know they can still take their rally there and hold it. But it might be, you know, after the barn door has been opened and the whole issue could be put to rest by the end of this week.
Has the Klan talked in any way about Dylann Roof?
Unfortunately, they have. I mean, you can listen to some of their radio advertising and their voicemails. They're calling him a hero. And then I talked to one gentleman who said that he was on the right track with his gun and violent actions. He just took it to the wrong place by going into a church.
In fact, that gentleman that you interviewed said he should be going after gangbangers, not people in churches.
Yeah, that was his comment. And he's the one who was one of the organizers of the July 18th rally.
Is there also an NAACP boycott of Charleston, South Carolina?
Yeah, well, it's not so much Charleston. It's supposedly the entire state. And the NAACP was not a party to the compromise and didn't back it back in 2000. So they launched a boycott of travel and tourism and economics of the state. And I think they wanted to parlay on top of, you know, I believe Arizona had quite an effective boycott over the NAACP, over whether or not to have a King holiday there. And I think it cost them some sporting events, and the NAACP here tried to hit something with that much impact. But what they've done is just been debatable whether or not it was really kind of affected much of anything.
Were there Confederate flags flying on the 4th of July in South Carolina?
There were some rally people there, and you know, just being out and about, you saw it on a pickup truck here or a house there. So it's, you know, it's not a private property issue. It's more on whether or not you're going to allow it and have it flying on something that's controlled or regulated or a state government building.
Final question for you, Skyler. Mother Emanuel Church, is that up and running? We know that there was a service there. The president spoke there. The Bible study classes have continued there as well.
Yeah, all that's back, and the street is open, and it's, you know, it's people are kind of moving on with their lives now, but everyone knows exactly where it's at. So if you're in Charleston, that's becoming more and more foot traffic.
Mm. And so the vote will be whatever it is, sometime probably later this week, or a final vote on this Confederate battle flag.
Yeah, if things go as the way that the leadership wants it, you'll see something by Thursday.
By Thursday. Well, Skyler Croft, thank you so much for joining us on Radio Times, getting the conversation started.
All right. I appreciate it.
No problem. And he's the Post Courier reporter. He's been covering South Carolina politics for that paper. Well, Walmart, Amazon, eBay, Sears, Target, NASCAR, and other companies have decided against selling and displaying the Confederate battle flag after the murder of 9 African Americans at their church in Charleston, South Carolina last month. A recent CNN ORC poll found that 57% of Americans and 75% of Southern whites view that flag as a symbol of Southern pride. On the other hand, 72% of African Americans see the flag as a symbol of racism. We're going to carry on this conversation talking about the Confederate battle flag, its history, its meanings, and we have two guests who have joined us here in our Philadelphia studio. Let me introduce them to you. Stephen Hahn is the Roy F. and Jeanette P. Nichols Professor of History at the University of Pennsylvania, author of a number of books, including most recently, The Political Worlds of Slavery and Freedom. Stephen Hahn, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Nice to be here, Marty.
Also with us is Imani Perry. She's the Hughes Rogers Professor in the Department of African American Studies, also faculty associate in the program in law and public affairs at Princeton University. And Imani Perry, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as
Thanks
well.
Thanks for having
You're
me.
You're very welcome. Let me start with you because you grew up in Alabama.
Yeah, I was born in Alabama, and I grew up in Massachusetts. But I mean, one of the things that's so misleading about the discussion about the flag and this conception that it's a form of that it's a sign of heritage is that the flag is embraced in the context of the civil rights movement. It's absolutely a backlash against 100 years later the process of actually enforcing the rights of African Americans in the South. And so the heritage that it symbolizes is one of trying to systematically exclude people of African descent. I think there's something meaningful about discussing the Confederate flag, but it's also the case that wherever you travel throughout the South, you're talking – there are not just monuments. There are bridges dedicated to the Confederacy. There are high school mascots. My cousin's high school mascot is a rebel, right? So everywhere you go, you have memorialization and lionization of figures of a war that was fought on the basis of trying to maintain slavery.
Let me go to you, Stephen. I actually quote the Confederate Vice President Alexander Stephens says, and this, of course, goes back to the 19th century, our new government is founded upon the great truth that the Negro is not equal to the white man. Is that what the Confederate flag means today?
Well, more than that, Alexander Stephens also said that slavery was the cornerstone of the Confederacy. Imani makes a number of very good points, especially the way in which opposition to the civil rights movement was a central part of deploying the Confederate flag on state buildings and using it for official purposes. But it's also important for people to recognize how the history of the war and the history of the Confederacy was rewritten after the Civil War and basically got national traction. If anyone is interested in what the Confederacy stood for, the historical method is very good. You go and read what people said. And it was very clear to people who organized the secession movement, who were slaveholders, that the Confederacy was put together to defend slavery and to defend white supremacy. And it was also treason, which the Lincoln administration made very clear. After the war, Confederates began to refashion the interpretation. Jefferson Davis himself wrote this endlessly, 1,200-page, two-volume, rise and fall of the Confederate government. But the point was that the Confederacy was not about slavery. It was about state rights. It was about Southern civilization. It was about local control. It was about opposition to an expanding national state. By the 1880s, the lost cause cult that was advanced by many white women and put up these Confederate memorials and also, pulled out the idea of the image of the faithful slave that went along with it, was erasing slavery from the history of the Confederacy. And I think in a lot of ways, the federal government, the United States, sort of bought into this.
Well, let's take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. We are talking about the history, the meanings of the Confederate battle flag. We're going to take a very short break and then get back to our conversation. We've got comments coming in. Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And do stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowen, and we are unwrapping the history, the meanings of the Confederate battle flag, and the effort, certainly in South Carolina, to take it down. It has been taken down in other parts of the country as well. And interestingly, a number of businesses have basically disassociated themselves with the Confederate flag. Our guests are Imani Perry, professor in the Department of African American Studies at Princeton University, and Stephen Hahn, who's a professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania. Imani, let me go back to you, and you talked about, people sort of whether this is about hate or heritage. Mm-hmm. And one hears from probably more white people, certainly than African Americans or minorities, that this is about heritage. This is about, my ancestors who fought in the Civil War. Maybe they didn't even own slaves, mm-hmm. but they fought in the Civil War. And they're saying, this is what this flag means to me. Can they own it that way?
Certainly they can claim to own it in that fashion. I think there's this habit that Americans often have, and it may even be a kind of seduction or addiction, this conception of both innocence and superiority, right? And so wanting to claim innocence, notwithstanding our history of violence and domination and oppression, and also wanting to lionize and fetishize heroes. And I think if we could have a public conversation about our history that was in a different fashion, that instead of needing to talk about history, our history in heroic terms, instead of wanting to create good guys and bad guys, if we actually just, and I mean this all the way through education, if we approach social studies and the study of history with complexity, with nuance, with a sense that it's always, it has been a difficult history and we don't need to really memorialize it all in this fashion, that to me is more salient than the presence of this monument or that monument. Because honestly, if we begin to go down the line, it's a slippery slope, right? If we start talking about Native Americans, if we start talking about George Washington, right, where does it end?
Which is a good question, something we were talking about. You know, okay, so let's say people vote to remove the Confederate flag. Then what do you do about Pettus Bridge? I mean, thinking about all the other landmarks and frankly, buildings that people use, bridges that people use. Do we get rid of those as well, Steve?
Well, I mean, I think they need to be understood in a broad context. You know, I've always wondered when people talk about it, it's our heritage. It's a symbol of pride. Well, what heritage are you, in fact, celebrating? Now, the truth is that most white families in the South at the time of the Civil War did not own slaves. Right. And many of them did enlist and fought in the Confederacy. But there were also a lot of whites who did not support the Confederacy. When we talk about the South, we have to remember Southerners include African Americans, who certainly regard themselves as Southerners if they were born and grew up in the South. And they include white people who did not sign on for this. So it becomes this very broad category. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, people who fought for the Confederacy knew what this was about. The Confederacy has to stand as one of the worst causes in human history. And so I don't understand why it is that their valiance, so to speak, needs to be celebrated, because there's certainly no discussion of celebrating the valiance of 180,000 African Americans who also fought in the Civil War under ferociously difficult circumstances.
I ran across a quote from someone whose ancestors fought in the Civil War for the South, and the quote was to this effect: "Are you saying that my ancestors are monsters?" I mean, it's obviously very personal inside a family.
Well, you know, many people over the course of history have supported movements and causes that were awful. And I don't think we need to say that, but we at the same time, we don't need to celebrate what they did.
Should we, Imani, think of this as a swastika? I mean, is it on the same level as a swastika?
You know, that's a complicated question. I certainly, if we look at the long history of the United States, the behaviors and the relationship to people of African descent obviously are comparable if you think about the Middle Passage. So, but, you know, not precisely the same. And yet it is the case that it represents a commitment to white supremacy. I mean, I don't know any other way to think of it.
How about for you, Steve? I mean, is it on the same par as a swastika?
I agree with Imani that getting into what was worse is not very helpful. But I think the relevant issue is that if members of, say, a Luftwaffe unit decided to celebrate their own participation and the valiance and difficulty of their service by deploying a flag, I think we would recognize it as something that was very objectionable, to say the least. Now, it doesn't—the issue isn't whether the Confederacy was the same as the Third Reich. It's simply to say that both were really horrendous causes, and yes, people gave their lives, and sometimes they did it for all sorts of complicated reasons, but it doesn't mean that we need to celebrate what they did.
Right. Well, and really what we're talking about is the possible removal from government, or I guess government slash public buildings. So from your perspective, Imani, does the people individually have the right to display, own, wear the Confederate flag, put it on their, you know, a sticker on their car?
Well, sure. I mean, you know, we do have First Amendment rights, and we don't want, once you get into the game of determining, you know, whether people have the right to this kind of speech or that kind of speech, the fact of the matter is that there are many minority groups that will bear the brunt of that kind of disciplining far more than those who support the Confederacy. But I think, you know, at the same time, we need to talk honestly about, for example, the proliferation of white supremacist groups that use both the Confederate flag and the swastika, and that you know, there's an idea there is a critical mass of people who are championing an ideology of hatred. And the fact that many elected officials, that many public figures who expect to be treated with respect, are in some ways capitulating to those forces by failing to say this is just simply wrong.
Well, Dylann Roof, the alleged shooter, you know, posed with both swastika or certainly and Rhodesian
That's
white
right.
supremacist yeah. symbols.
Well, he recognized
as well.
Himself as part of an international movement of white supremacy and in favor of certain goals associated with that.
Can we say the Civil War is not over?
Well, the Civil
150
War...
150 years later?
Well, I mean, the Civil War is over, but the issues that were raised by the war... Look, I thought a lot of things were put to rest, and then recently the issue of secession has come up again. There's no question that in a federal system, the relationship between the federal government and the states, issues about local control, but certainly questions about... racial discrimination, about the long legacy of not only enslavement, but of government-state commitment to maintaining white supremacy and its consequences for people of African descent in the United States across a board of wealth, of education, of opportunity, of access to politics. These are the issues that really are at the center of what we need to talk about.
Let me quickly reintroduce you. I do want to get some callers in on the conversation. That's Stephen Hahn. He's a professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania. He's written a number of books about the American South, about 19th century history, including most recently one titled The Political Worlds of Slavery and Freedom. Imani Perry is a professor in the Department of African American Studies, also a program associate faculty associate in the program in law and public affairs at Princeton University. We are talking about the Confederate flag, of course, been in the news for some pretty horrifying reasons, and a number of calls from a number of different quarters that the flag be taken down from governments, sometimes even public buildings as well. We want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Imani, is this a Southern problem or is this an American problem since we've sort of expanded even beyond the flag?
Yeah, no, it's an American problem. And one of the unfortunate things about discussions around race in this country is that the South generally bears the brunt. There's a lot of pointing of fingers at the South. And I'll just use just a few examples from my personal history. So I was born 9 years after and a couple of miles away from the bombing of 16th Street Baptist Church. Then we moved to Milwaukee, where I went to a preschool where that was opened in protest of segregation in Milwaukee schools. And then I moved to Massachusetts in the immediate aftermath of the busing crisis there, where the same kinds of mob violence and harassment were happening. So there's the history of this kind of racism is a national history. It's even a global history. I mean, we have to, I think, reject the urge to point fingers elsewhere, and that this should be an opportunity to actually look comprehensively at our nation.
Do you think this is a moment when the country can take a clearer, more clear-eyed look at our history? I mean, sometimes there are these quote-unquote teachable moments. The president and I gave what to me was just an extraordinary speech at the eulogy at that church. And he tied together on a number of really important things, including obviously the grace of the people at this church. But is this a moment when we can be more honest about ourselves?
Well, one would like to think so. I'm not very optimistic about that, partly because I don't think that there are enough people in American political life who, in fact, are interested in taking on the larger political and public policy implications of this, nor is there enough of an organized social movement to bring pressure. My fear is that this is, you know, a momentary crisis and that there's a lot of people who are trying to put Band-Aids on it and they're nervous about what's going on. But, you know, I should say, apropos of what Amani suggested, too, as a national thing, remember, the Supreme Court rules in Plessy versus Ferguson in 1896 that segregation, separate but equal, is constitutional. The Supreme Court ruled in 1898 that disfranchisement of African Americans was constitutional. 1915, Birth of a Nation premiered, which celebrated the Confederacy flag waving and the battle flag waving and all, demonized Reconstruction, and Woodrow Wilson, who was sitting in the White House and who had a PhD in history, said it was like history with lightning. It's so true. This was the mindset that was national, not simply Southern.
Mm. That was, you know, 100 years ago. I mean, can we say that's history or is that present?
One would hope that the, you know, we are now in the 150th anniversary of Reconstruction, and I think that some of the same sensibilities about what went wrong that Birth of a Nation captured in very dramatic ways and very ignorant ways is still with a lot of people, and I think it helps them look at the claims of African Americans as somehow illegitimate.
You referenced this earlier, Imani, talking about the flag and its various meanings. And I guess, you know, the question is, can we move forward from this? Or are we still stuck with our history? Or maybe that's just our legacy.
I mean, I don't... we are always stuck with history, but we make choices in every season about how we tell that history, how we engage with that history. You know, and so I, just to piggyback on what Steve was saying, we can look even through the 20th century at lots of choices that have sustained racial inequality, federal choices, right, that led to redlining, racially restrictive covenants, mob violence in northern cities as well, racial. And so the deeply unequal society that we live with now has causes. We have a dominant discourse that says it's because of failure of those who are subject to this history, right? Those who are subject to the history of racism in the present. We're stuck with the history, but we don't have to tell it in the way that we do.
Well, and you referenced this earlier. Let me toss this to you, Steve, then we'll get to some of our callers and people with comments. Is that the Confederate battle flag came back, I guess, in the, 40s, 50s?
50s and 60s.
In 60s, when... this was the civil rights movement.
That's right.
So there's this was.
I think it is important, and Imani mentioned this earlier. Somehow, you know, when people who defend the Confederate flag talk about their heritage, it's as if this goes way, 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 way back. It's not true. In fact, it was part of what we call massive resistance to the Brown decision in 1954 and to the growing civil rights movement, so that Georgia changed its flag. South Carolina put its flag on the state capitol. It's also worth noting that the Confederate type flag was embraced by Florida and Alabama in the 1890s. just at the time that Jim Crow was being institutionalized. So this is part of the rewriting of the Civil War and the recasting of the meaning of the Confederacy itself and making clear its association with white supremacy.
Let me read an email from Teresa. She says, I'm a Southerner who has lived in Philadelphia for 28 years. I'm quite upset by the notion of the obliteration of all aspects of the Confederacy. I see the current debate very disturbing. The flag has been used by others to represent racist views. I've always seen the flag as a symbol of Southern pride. There are many things that I find offensive, but I don't expect others to remove them to please me. Northerners look down on Southerners to this day. She raises a number of things. So picking up on what we were saying earlier, which is for some people, they're saying, look, I'm not a racist, but I see this flag and what it represents as part of my heritage, something that I'm proud of. I'm looking at you, Imani.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm Southern too, right? And it's and so for me, the flag represents an explicit hostility to that, to my heritage, right? And so, and then, I mean, I think it's a strange formulation. There are many different ways that we can think about our culture and think about our history. So for example, Southerners can embrace the history of the Civil Rights Movement, the way it transformed the nation, right? Southerners can talk about various other kinds of cultural practices.
Literature, the South.
Literature, food ways. I mean, there's so much. So I don't, but that said, I think she's right that Northerners do often look down on Southerners, right? And it is a way. So on the one hand, I think the comment is an effort to claim a kind of innocence, but it's also the case that Northerners often try to claim innocence vis-a-vis the South with respect to these issues.
Now you're nodding your head. We're almost having a break. Go ahead, Steve.
Well, I mean, that is true. And one of the things that happens as a result of the Civil War is that the winning side gets to write a lot of the story, which is why the Confederates wanted to write theirs. And part of it is to erase their own responsibility for slavery and racism. The first Jim Crow laws in the United States were passed in the northern states before the Civil War, not in the southern states.
In Boston.
After the Civil War, African Americans were disfranchised, they were excluded from public facilities and so on and so forth. So I do think that there is a kind of righteousness that, in fact, the Civil Rights Movement for a while consecrated until we've learned, as Imani pointed out, that some of the early boycotts took place in the North, and segregation was de facto very powerful there, too.
Well, let's take that short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation talking about civil rights, the Confederate battle flag. There are calls to have it removed, and that, of course, has raised a whole host of important and interesting questions about our history. We're going to take a very short break, and then do stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane. We are talking about our history. We're talking about the meaning and meanings, I should say, in history of the Confederate battle flag, efforts in South Carolina and some other states as well to take it down. And again, our guests are Imani Perry. She's the Hughes Rogers Professor in the Department of African American Studies at Princeton University, where she's faculty associate in the program in law and public affairs. Stephen Hahn is the Roy F. and Jeanette P. Nichols Professor of History at the University of Pennsylvania, author of a number of books, including most recently one titled The Political Worlds of Slavery and Freedom. And we want you to join the conversation. Now, a lot of emails here I see, Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. Steve, you were here when we were talking about Monticello and Thomas Jefferson and, you know, what to do about slave-owning founders of the country. And as I was putting the show together, I was thinking how people still venerate Thomas Jefferson in spite of his obvious flaws. And they're on our currency, and now we're talking about taking Andrew Jackson off the currency. I mean, at what point do we sort of keep erasing these people or perhaps taking them off their pedestal, which is maybe the the correct thing to do, but I just thought, you know, what do we do about Thomas Jefferson?
Well, you know, Thomas Jefferson's an interesting case as far as this goes, because when the Confederacy was, when secession was taking place and the Confederacy was being organized, Jefferson was scoffed at. He was scoffed at because of the Declaration of Independence, because of the idea that all people are created equal. The Confederacy was not organized around that idea. The Confederacy was organized around the idea of people being unequal. So rather than being revolutionaries of the mid-19th century, they were really reactionaries in all sorts of important ways. You know, it's taking people off their pedestals is always a good idea.
Yes.
And
it's lonely
there are a lot of different ways of taking people off their pedestals, but having a critical view of everybody in our past, I think, is central to understanding the relationship of the past to the present.
We have an email. We heard from someone who believes in the Confederate flag, if I can put it that way. An email from Bob says, the war between the states is over, and it's over, and it's 150 years ago. It's time to officially retire any flag that flew over Dixie. It's a flag of hatred and racism, only resurrected in response to Brown v. Board and other civil rights banners. It's the co-banner, the swastika of the Third Reich. So clearly there are, Imani, people who see it in those terms, and they're saying it's time to retire the flag.
Yeah. I mean, and I think I agree that it's time to retire the flag, but I do think, you know, the point that we have to have, different kinds of discussions about these, about all of these figures is incredibly important, right? I mean, I guess, you know, the way, I mean, I often think about the language that is associated with positions around the flag or the around the Civil War, and people talk about, you know, states' rights and the federal intrusion, and we think about in that moment, in fact, the debate is about whether or not slavery is going to become a national issue, that the states determining that there are some places where we're not going to have slavery is actually what elicits the reaction. So at the very core of the conversation, and then we get to the discussion around states' rights really in response to the recognition of African American citizenship, right? So we just have to talk about these things in really different ways than we have.
Where do we put these flags if we take them down, Steve? Where do they belong?
Well, I have a shovel.
you mean that?
Well,
bury them?
No, I think that the Confederate flags are part of the history of the United States. I do think that we have sort of accepted the idea that the Confederacy was a legitimate movement and state. Now, the Lincoln administration never recognized the Confederacy, nor did any other country in the world. In a sense, like ISIS, you can claim to be a state, but if no one recognizes you as a state, you're not a state. To the extent that we've written the history of this period as if the Confederacy actually existed as a legitimate state, I think we have made it possible for people to wave the flag and accept the interpretations that former Confederates placed on what they were doing. And I think that this is a problem not only for the public but for historians as well. I reviewed Jim McPherson's recent book on Jefferson Davis as Commander-in-Chief. And look, you know, McPherson's a wonderful historian, maybe the best we have of the Civil War era. But I wondered about whether talking about Jefferson Davis as a Commander-in-Chief ends up legitimating the Confederacy as a political project.
And putting him on that pedestal.
And putting him on some kind of pedestal, as former Confederates did for Robert E. Lee, who was part of the process of deifying Confederate leaders and trying to put them in a category that didn't include slavery.
Let me get Raymond from Doylestown to join our conversation. And Raymond, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yeah, good morning, Marty. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Comment I would like to make. Every Memorial Day in the last 40 years, I've put out seven flags in my front yard, and five of them are American flags, and two are small Confederate flags. I do that because my family has put men in the military since Vietnam. Matter of fact, my cousin's on the wall in Vietnam, Vietnam Memorial in Washington.
I'm sorry to hear that.
all the way down to Spanish American War and the Civil War. Both my great-grandfather and his brother fought in the Confederate Army. They were not slaveholders. They were just poor white farmers who felt the need to serve. One was captured and sent to a prisoner of war camp, and he was there until the surrender. I don't look at the Confederate flag as a flag of hate. I view it as pride in my family and the generations of men who came forward and stepped up when they were asked to serve. And I sort of resent the fact that because I do that, I'm characterized as some, a rebel rouser, hate monger, racist, whatever you want to call it. It's just a matter of pride, and every Memorial Day, that's my statement.
Well, Raymond, I appreciate the call to Radio Times, and one can hear the emotion in your voice as you talk about your family. Imani, I'm curious about what you say in response.
You know, my response is people in my family served from the Civil War down until, the 1990s and almost all major wars. And for the majority of that time, they served while being denied full citizenship in this country. They served in contexts where, and one of my great aunt served during World War II, and then when she came back, became someone who worked for the NAACP when it was an illegal organization, excuse me, in Alabama. So, you know, this conception that the fact that there's some particular and exclusive valor associated with secessionists versus those who pledged their loyalty to the nation despite the fact that they're excluded in every way, I think is a problem. Mm-hmm. I also think there's a difference between identifying with a history, having a love of your family tree, and then actually flying a symbol, right, that represents slavery or that represents race. I mean, I think those are two huge differences, you know. And to be honest, you know, we could have a debate about the American flag in general. And its relationship to life. So I wouldn't suggest that this is a kind of exclusively a question that we should raise around the Confederate flag.
I took a big breath there and kind of shut you off there. Raymond, no, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. And picking up on what he said, is it possible, Steve, that people can say, I'm going to create my own meaning for this flag, that I'm going to make it mine, and it's going to mean something to me? It may not mean what it means to, you know, a white supremacist, but this is how I'm going to make this flag meaningful.
Well, I think that everybody makes their own meanings of symbols, even if they're symbols that a wider public associates very clearly with certain ideas or certain events. And as Imani suggested, you know, that we have protected speech and people are entitled to express their views, certainly in their homes or whatever. The issue of the Confederate flag has to do with using that as a symbol connected with the state. Nonetheless, I think there are good reasons for people to re-examine what they mean or what they think of these symbols in view of what it means for other people who see them.
Raymond, I appreciate the call. Let me see what Cletus from, looks like Ben Salem, has to say. Go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Thanks, Marty. Another great show.
Thanks.
I wonder what your guest might think about the use of the Confederate flag in the context of reenactments.
You know, I'm glad you raised that, Cletus, because that was also on my list near the bottom, and a list of my questions that I was curious about. We read about a reenacting group here, I think in Pennsylvania, where they were told, you know, don't use the Confederate flag. And I don't know. What do you think about that, Steve?
My understanding is that there's actually more Confederate reenactors than Union reenactors, and not only in the South. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a great book by Tony Horowitz on this called Confederates in the Attic. He may have been on a show here. If people want to reenact battles of the Civil War, they should do so. I don't think that's what this issue is about.
Yeah.
Although I think people who engage in these reenactments and think that they can cordon off the military aspects of the Civil War from the political and moral aspects of the Civil War, I think that's mistaken. And at the very least, they ought to think about that.
Iman, you want to add to that?
I completely agree with what Steve said. I mean, I think of reenactments as akin to theater, and I think it's important to be able to have a range of expressions in those contexts.
Let me see what James from Philadelphia has to say. James, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yeah, one thing your guests seem to be leaving out is that in parts of Europe, most notably Germany and Russia, it is against the law to display the Nazi swastika. Guess what flag they use in Germany and in Russia as the substitute hate flag?
And I'm assuming you're going to say the
Confederate flag. The Confederate flag. And so if people want to use that flag as their heritage in this country, then it is their right. And they should also know that the only war fought in the history of mankind on this planet to keep a people slaves were the American South. So if you want that as part of your heritage, that flag is the substitute hate flag in Germany, where they cannot display the swastika, given the history of Germany, and in Russia, and this is the substitute hate flag, then, hey, more power to you.
Well, James, I appreciate the call. Imani, interesting commentary there.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, for me, that is suggestive of the fact that there's both domestic and international networks of white supremacist organizations. And so this embrace of a set of symbols, and that's not to say that everybody who embraces the Confederate flag is identified with that, but it's certainly the case that we need people to explicitly disidentify with that ideology, to not, you know, this soft peddling in response to Dylann Roof's murder of nine people is alarming, and it's suggestive of a devaluing of the lives of the people in that community and of Black life generally. And so so I think it is an instructive point about where we are.
Steve, if you see someone wearing a Confederate flag or it's on their car, their vehicle, whatever, what do you think? What do you think about them?
Well, I mean, I think for a lot of people it's a symbol of defiance, but it's probably a defiance that is associated with identifying themselves as a white person with quote-unquote white interests against the policies and activities of the federal state and its clients who are seen to be people of color. Could it be the case that there are people who just fly it because, I don't know, they've got a very different interpretation? Mm-hmm. Yes, but, you know, people aren't stupid. And they do try to project an image and identity for themselves in relationship to what they know. And it's very difficult, I think, for people not to see the Confederate flag as a symbol of the white South and what that might involve. And to talk about Southern pride, I think Imani was so right as far as this goes. The South is a complicated place. Now there are many, many Latinos in the South. Yeah. So to think about the Southern pride as being directly connected with the Confederacy is not, it's inaccurate. And I think people who are prideful of the South have many other symbols that they could use.
Okay. Go ahead, Imani.
No, absolutely. I mean, I identify deeply with Southern heritage, right? That's and I identify with that heritage in terms of a kind of resilience of the richness of culture, of language, right? Of music, of literature, all of these sorts of things. So there are. It does not require one to embrace the Confederacy. But I think another point that is we haven't touched on, excuse me, is
no,
that
we're almost out of time, but no, go ahead.
Okay,
no,
really,
no, go ahead.
Really quickly, that for there's also a piece of this that is about white working class and poor Southerners who are in many who are marginalized and disenfranchised. And I think that it's relevant to also find a way to talk about them in this conversation.
Well, I'm really glad we ended on that note. And my thanks to both of you for joining us today on Radio Times, talking about important and in many ways a difficult thing to talk about. Imani Perry, she is a professor in the Department of African American Studies at Princeton University, where she's also a faculty associate in the program in Law and Public Affairs. Stephen Hahn, the Roy F. and Jeanette P. Nichols Professor of History at the University of Pennsylvania and author most recently of The Political Worlds of Slavery and Freedom. My thanks to both of you for joining us today on Radio Times. I'm Marty Moscoen. I can see lots of comments here. Certainly go to our Facebook page and we can carry on this conversation. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thanks for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. And do stay with us. We'll be right back.